when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
And hello, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher with Prepping 2.0. Welcome, everyone who's joining us today. But also, I want to stop for a moment, take a deep breath, and say hello, Glenn Tate.
Hello, Shelby. How are you?
I'm good. We're co-hosts and we're partners.
We're co-hosting our lives. We're married, so we're co-hosting our lives. So yes, this show and our lives.
See, and that's why I always pause when I say that, because I'm like, how do you say that? How do you say that in one phrase? You can't. You have to explain it every time.
That's right. So we are married. We are active preppers. And as will become important for the rest of the show, we are also very proudly Christians. And that's an important factor. We don't talk about it often because it doesn't fit in the topics. And we understand some percentage of people listening don't want to hear about it. And that's okay. But it is a big part of our lives. And we think it's a big part. There's something to consider about that with our guest, Forrest Garvin, and his work he's done on, it's not the name of the book, but what I would call the Christian case for prepping. And so there's that. Shelby, we always do the top 100 things that go first in a crisis. And this is based on the experience of people in Bosnia, for example. We're on item number 32. And you, my dear, have a lot of passion about item number 32. Tell everybody what it is.
Well, and again, I always like to tell people before I say what it is, go to our website, prepping2-0.com, lower right. You can see the full list. And it's a good list to think about things that you might want to think about prepping for, have a supply of, or prep for to barter for to collapse, because all of these things became very handy in the Bosnian crisis. So number 32 is seeds. Seeds meaning things that you plant in the ground and you grow vegetables with. So, and it says specifically on the link, heirloom seeds. And this is why I'm passionate about it. Heirloom seeds are seeds that have been around for a long time. They have not been hybridized. They haven't been GMO-ized. And so when they grow, you can glean seeds from them and propagate them and keep them going for season after season. Here's the little secret, the dirty little secret I found out about heirloom seeds this year. I made a really big point to plant heirloom seeds. And I just about pulled every hair out of my head trying to get these things to just grow, just to pop out of the soil and show their green little leaves. And found out from a fellow prepper that we've also had on the show, Derek, who does a homestead in California. And he said very clearly, he said, heirloom seeds are finicky. He called them the snowflake seed of the seed world. They are picky. They don't take abuse much. They can't handle. And if, you know, they easily perish. And so I said, I have found that out. So if you are thinking about seeds and how to get them in your preps and you just went out and bought, like, you can buy them like a can, little tiny can of them. And you have like 20 varieties of heirloom seeds and you think that'll just keep you. No, you need to like put a few in the ground and practice and see what it takes to get them to grow where you are at and get an idea of how they grow. Because I'm going to tell you this from firsthand experience, it's been a challenge this year trying to get things to grow out of the ground that were heirloom seeds. So that's my little word of advice on heirloom seeds. Grow them and figure out how to grow them. It's a skill.
One thing I would add to that, yes, everything she's saying is true. We have heirloom tomatoes that she planted that are not growing. And then the ones from the previous year that like fell onto the ground and in our greenhouse are growing through the gravel. They're growing. They're hardy non-heirloom seeds. And they're growing through gravel. And the heirloom seeds that had beautiful, perfect soil, beautiful, perfect everything, not growing, could be us. Who knows? One thing I would add about seeds in a collapse and prepping situation, they are excellent barter materials, and they are also really good for getting your community going and sustaining your community and maybe being able to help out other people in the charitable sense, which is a foreshadowing of what Forrest is going to talk about, I think, when it comes to the Christian case for prepping. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce the hardest working man in the prepping world. We know this to be true from all the texts we get at like 11 o'clock at night. Not that he bothers us or anything like that, but I'm telling you, this guy, he works tirelessly. Forrest Garvin, say hello to the folks.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Hey, can I add something real quick to the heirloom seeds?
Please do.
Okay. The seeds that you currently buy in the box stores, they don't reproduce seeds. I'm not sure if you guys covered that, but heirloom seeds are the only seeds that will reproduce year over year over year. The other ones have been genetically modified, so they won't even produce seeds. I mean, plants that will actually harvest a lot of food.
Yeah, and the finicky ones we're having trouble with are indeed heirloom seeds, yeah. Which should be propagating the next season, and we're just having a tough time getting them to start. It could be a variety of things, weather this year. It could be the specific seeds we have. But yeah, Shelby
was
giving. You
gotta talk to them.
You do. You have to talk to them. and Shelby and I do. We put on our little headphone and microphone thing for the show, and we talk to the seeds. It's really weird. It's really weird. Our neighbors think we're weird. Oh, wait, we don't have any neighbors. Oh, my goodness. Well, we have you on, Forrest, for a couple reasons. First of all, you're a good friend, and you've been tremendously active in the prepping movement, for lack of a better term. It is a movement, and we love having you on. You have a podcast of your own. Why don't you tell folks about that so they can listen to that?
Yeah, it's a podcast called Prepping Academy. It's usually I'm interviewing people. That's usually the better podcast when it's just me talking. I sometimes bore myself, but and I haven't done it in about a month and a half or so. And there's some news that I'm going to release to the prepping world on your podcast tonight.
Oh my!
That some things have been going on in my life, and so I think it's good, and people will kind of appreciate me kind of not being on the air for 30 to 60 days.
Well, when would you like to?
And this I can do it right now.
Let's do it. Let's give folks some news.
So several months back, I looked at investing in a company, and it's a company called Sunoven International. You familiar with Sunoven International?
Sure am. In the Northwest, we're not big fans of Sun Ovens because if you had a cloud oven, we would be really good with that. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Well, I am now a CEO of Sun Oven International, and we're gonna make it great.
Wow, that's huge.
That is huge because Sun Ovens are really, really good. And I don't mean to say, you know, here in the Northwest, Western Washington, they, you know, but Forrest, as you know, we're doing.
You do have to have sun. Yes,
you do have to have sun. Most parts of the country do. We are going to do a book on food, the food element of preps. We're going to be doing some shows, and we're going to, because I know the Sun Oven thing for most parts of the country is absolutely huge. And Sun Oven, I know from, even though I don't have a Sun Oven, I know from just, you know, talking to peers and everything, is kind of the bee's knees of the Sun Oven, you know, world. And so that is really cool. So sounds like you might be having more time because you were holding down a day job, right? And so now you might be doing more prepping stuff. Is that kind of where this is?
That is correct. Yeah, it's in the same genre, which helps as well. And you know what? I love you guys so much. I'm going to send you guys a free Sun Oven.
Oh, cool.
And I don't expect great reviews, but I expect good reviews.
Oh, awesome. Well, no, and in the summer, like right now, it would be a great Sun Oven day. But here's the thing, and we'll do a little bit of a detour into food and everything, because this Sun Oven thing is a great way to bring this up. Layering. We are all about layering, and that means having different foods prepared different ways, stored different ways, and different levels of convenience, from MREs that you open up and you eat to storing, you know, raw ingredients that need to be cooked, having mixtures of those things. And I think, you know, we've talked about, you got to be able to do some canning. We have a food freeze dryer, which we absolutely love, by the way, the Harvest Right. We're huge fans of. We're going to do a whole show on that. So there's canning, there's just traditional vacuum sealing, there's dehydrating, there's Sun Oven, there's using propane one burner, you know, stoves, there's using traditional stoves, there's using campfires, and there's everything from MREs to, cereal, breakfast cereal that's on a tremendous sale that you vacuum seal, all the way to canned stuff and chickens and a greenhouse. You can see by all these different things I'm putting out there what we're talking about layering. And I think a sun oven, when it comes to the preparation part of food, is an awesome thing to have in for layering, because it gives you more capabilities. If it's really sunny that day, you've got that capability. And conversely, where we live, you know, having that propane one burner is really good when it's cloudy. So that is really cool. We would love to do that. And yes. We'll give you the address off the air when we're done with this, and we would welcome it. And it's going to play prominently in the book that's coming out. Everyone's saying, hey, when's that book coming out? Hey, when we write it. you know how that is. And we have we have Shelby's book 3 just was released 2 weeks from when folks are going to hear this show, 2 weeks ago. And we got maybe some more books coming out, but probably the next one's going to be, we don't have a real title for it, but I've been something like The Food Element of Preps, because we want to make sure it's not a cookbook. There are recipes, but it's way bigger than that. It's how to store food, how to buy food, how to prepare it, and how to diversify yourself with layering. The Food Element of Preps. That's cool. Well, sun oven is good stuff. You know, especially if you live in, I don't know, like the lower 48 minus Western Washington, right? I mean, pretty much most of the country. Anywhere where you have four seasons instead of what we have.
Two months, right? Well, and let me just jump in here. Congratulations, Forrest. That's awesome.
Yeah, that I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
And it's in the same genre. And so it's I was, before this, I was selling robotics and automation. So I'm looking forward to it. And it's going to help me with PrepperNet as well, because they kind of tie in right together. Same people.
Very good.
And speaking of PrepperNet, there are two main topics we have for you that we have you on for this show for. The first one's PrepperNet, and the second one is your book on the Christian case for prepping. We'll talk a little bit about PrepperNet, but to be honest, I hope that we can spend most of our time talking about your book, because there's a lot of meatiness to it. Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff, but PrepperNet's an important thing. Why don't you tell folks what PrepperNet is? And I will preface it by saying this. Shelby and I, the number one question we are always asked, count on it. Any given encounter, like at an expo, people say, oh, you guys wrote those books. Hey, I have a question for you. And we kind of look at each other and go, here it comes. And the question is, how do I meet fellow preppers without having weirdos, without letting everybody know that I'm a prepper? How do I do this? And we used to not have an answer until you came along with PrepperNet. So tell folks about PrepperNet.
Okay, so I'm an ex-banker. And being an ex-banker, I needed to meet people that I related to in the hobbies and the things I was learning, which was the prepping, all things survival. And I didn't know how to do that. So my best friend was actually some guy online, and I remember his username. It was KA47NC18. I don't know who that was, but we sent about 3,000 messages back and forth, just learning from each other. So about 5 years ago, I started a meetup in Charlotte, North Carolina, and just to see how it went, six people came, and it really kind of set me back, because I'm like, these weren't the kind of people I was looking to meet. And actually, I was the one that was kind of the weirdo. I was the business guy. All these other guys, people were, you know, homesteaders and hunters. And so, but from that meeting in Charlotte, we grew to, we even had some meetings over 100 people. We've even had special guests like Wim Fortune, author. He's actually been to our meetup in the Charlotte group. So we expanded it out through the Carolinas, and we were I was helping friends start cities and helping them run their meetups. And so about two years ago, we were in 19 cities in the Carolinas, had meetups every month, and we had 8,700 members. And I'm like, okay, wow, this is going really good. I know. And then so people from outside the Carolinas were asking me, hey, how can I get this going in my city, in my area? And I was helping them getting started. And over time, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to expand this. I'm going to have to change the name of it. The name was the Carolina Preppers Network. So we changed the name to PrepperNet, and we launched nationwide less than a year ago. And currently we're in 65 plus cities. I have 65 plus leaders in 65 cities that run meetups every single month. And we have over 28,000 members now. These meetings are face-to-face. The training is amazing, but that's not the purpose of the meetings. So every time you go to one of the meetups, you get some training. If it's, you know, if it's water purification, beekeeping, or solar, whatever it is. But let's be real, that information is, I mean, it's available out on the internet. What Meetups does, PrepperNet brings to people is the ability to meet people in your community so you can form a relationship and possibly form a survival group or a MAG group. That's the number one key, is to meet other people. When I was looking for the group, man, I just needed to confirm that I wasn't nuts and I wasn't the only one thinking this way. And I guess with the, you know, Facebook and the internet, it has helped, you know, confirm that we're not crazy or nuts. We're doing the right thing. But with Meetup, it allows you to meet people in your own neighborhood, your own community, and possibly, you know, become friends, trust each other, and then maybe form a group. And that's the sole reason for PrepperNet.
Well, one of the questions we get after people ask us how to do this, we say PrepperNet, and I say sort of the shorthand version is, I say it's kind of like Meetup, or it's almost like a dating website, even though it's not about dating, you know, where you show an interest and somebody else shows an interest. The second question I always get from people is, yeah, but I'm not just going to tell anybody where I live and stuff like that. Describe to people how this is.
You
as anonymous as you'd like it to be. It's as anonymous as you'd like it to be. Describe that, because that's a big scariness to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to get on a database and all that kind of stuff. You come up with an ingenious way to do this, so tell everybody about it.
Well, two ways, if you don't mind. One is, a lot of people come to our groups and they use anonymous names. Our group in Raleigh, for example, everyone has a nickname. No one really uses their real name until you get to know someone. I mean, the leader there, his name's Cowboy. He has one lady, her name's Mouse, and then you have Espresso. You have all these different names that they use and they go by. And it's really cool, because when you go to these meetings, people don't force information out of you. So it's your discipline to tell people what you want to tell. But it also, at some point, you do have to start sharing so people are interested and maybe, and you becoming friends. But so that's one aspect, is just be anonymous and go and talk to people and then have coffee with them, do some training with them. And it will happen with the right people. It would happen. One of the things I say all the time, and I say it tongue in cheek, but I really mean it, is if you're not in a group, you're going to die when the crap hits the fan. You've got to be in some kind of support group. And sometimes it's not your best friends that are in that support group. You just got to tolerate a lot of them, because your life is on the line. You don't want people to hate you. But so you've got to get in a group. And the best way to get in a group is meet them in person. And then I think what you're referring to is my personal survival group, which has been around for 18 years. We've trained. I had dinner the other night with Charlie Hogwood. Charlie wrote the book on survival groups. Matter of fact, it was called Mag's Survival Groups. We had sushi the other night. Everybody made fun that we were eating sushi. But we did. And I was telling him a little bit about my group. And he said, man, there's not any group out there that is like your group. And I'm like, well, thanks for saying that. And that's because we were passionate about each other. We care about the training. We care while we're doing it. But we have a couple in our group that has a young lady that was going to the University of Alabama. And we were kind of nervous. We're like, what do we do with this young lady that is 500 miles away? What happens if the crap hits the fan? I mean, what do we do? Sure, we can train her and give her skills, but let's be honest, she's 18 and she had some skills, but she can't even have a gun on the campus there. So with PrepperNet, starting and it's going, I'm like, you know what? I need a group in that area so I can meet other preppers in the Alabama area and then near the University of Alabama. How am I going to meet them? So I created a software that allows people to join PrepperNet, and you give your name, whatever name you want to give. You give your real email. I do verify that it works, and your zip code. And so now I have a database of people that have the zip code in that area. And the software allows me to anonymously email them. So I don't know who them are, the people in the zip codes near the university. I have no clue who they are. I can see on the software there's 17 members in that area. I can send, I type of an email, say, hey, my name's Forrest, this is my phone number, this is my email address. We have a young lady there in that area. I'm really wanting to meet some people. I'm going to be in the area, in August. Can we meet for coffee? And that gives me the opportunity to build a relationship with people I never knew before that I know have like-minded. And I verify that, and over time I trust them. And you know what? We actually found a couple that has a young gentleman. Well, we hope that didn't work out. But I mean,
the dating website. Yes,
I know, at Alabama, and they were preppers, and we met. We all, I did, and I'm talking the couple that has the daughter. They went out to eat. They've been out to eat like four or five times over the last year, and now there's a trust and a bond, and now they have a plan for this young lady, because I know in my personal survival group, if that young lady is not taken care of, and if we don't know where she is and we can't communicate to her, the rest of the family is not going to be useful to my group. They're going to be worried sick. They're going to be thinking about going down to pick her up. Everything that could harm my group. So now with the knowledge that we have communications with the family down there, meaning even like ham radio and HF, and that we trust them, then now it allows my team to work more efficient as a group and not worry so much about that young lady. And so that was kind of the real reason that software was created. It was selfish for my group, but people have been using it. And I do have a quick story, unless you guys have a question.
We have about 2 minutes. So can you please start it?
Story. Yep. Mm-hmm. So a gentleman sent me this because I don't really monitor too much what, the message is going on. So when I send the message, I don't know who it goes to, and it's their responsibility to reply back. So it's totally anonymous to them, the people I'm mailing to. But they get my information because I'm the one trying to connect with them. So I get an email from a gentleman in Tampa, Florida saying, Forrest, you would not believe this. I sent an email out to 12 people that were in my zip code. And a gentleman replied for me, and the email went like this: Jim, is this Jim on so and so street? I'm six houses down from you. I had no idea you were a prepper. Let's get together. And they had no idea there were six houses down the street. It was down the street in a corner, and they had no idea that both of them were preppers. And they met through that software, and now they're hanging out and they're helping with my Tampa group.
I love it. And to recap for folks, if you are thinking about this, go to preppernet.com. There's the free part, and then there's the paid part with more features. And just put your zip code in and see who's around. Use a fake name. You can use a burner email account if you want. Nobody will know who you are. You will start to find out if there's interest in your zip code, and nobody is going to know who you are. And go to the meeting. I mean, my handle is always Heavy G. Hey, I'm Heavy G. And it goes like that. Well, we are about out of time. Shelby, you have something to take us up.
Well, real quick, let me jump in there. Go to our website, prepping2-0.com, and PrepperNet is listed under Friends and Affiliates. So hold that thought. We'll be right back after the break.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured, rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test is needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always ready, always charged, grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 amp hour internal battery, the operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher with my husband and fellow prepper, Glenn Tate, but also our special guest, Forrest Garvin. And just to reiterate what we said before we quickly took a quick break, if you want more information about PrepperNet and what we've just talked about and developing that trust within your community with fellow preppers so that when things go south, you have a group that you can depend on and depend on with your life. That's how important this is. Just go to our website, prepping2-0.com, click on Friends and Affiliates, and there's a graphic there of PrepperNet. Click on it. It'll take you right over to the website. There's the free aspect that Glenn was talking about, and then you can join so that you can have a little bit more of the more dynamic abilities with PrepperNet. So, but the other part of that we wanted to talk to, with Forrest about, he has a new book out. I don't know how new it is. It's been out less than a year, called The Case for, I'm going to say it wrong, Forrest. What is it? Go ahead.
The Case for Christian Preparedness.
Case for Christian Preparedness. And mm-hmm. as you can tell from the title, everybody, it's the Christian, the biblically based reasons for prepping. And before you talk about it, Forrest, I want to talk about another question we often get. I guess it's not a question, it's more of a comment. But there are some people out there that have this laissez-faire float in the wind, and these are Christians. By the way, a lot of what we're going to talk about, you know, is geared towards Christians. If you're not a Christian, I still think it's interesting. And we're not, this isn't, you know, the evangelical hour. We're not going to try to turn you into a Christian, but these are Christian biblically based reasons for prepping. But we run into these people that float along in life and they're Christians, and they say things like, well, if everything falls apart, I mean, I'm just going to get raptured out of here and I don't have to worry about anything. The other variation is, well, it says in the Bible, which is always kind of a a dangerous thing because there are misquotes from the Bible all the time. But, well, you know, God will provide. So, I mean, if there's a collapse and I need fresh drinking water, I mean, God's going to have a truckload of bottled water drive up to my house. I'm being facetious. But, I mean, this whole idea that preppers don't need to actually take any active steps because they'll just – and I'm going to say this, I'm a Christian, I'm not making fun of Christians, they'll just magically be provided for. Right. And your book addresses why Christians in particular should be prepared. And just talk about this. This is a fascinating thing. Both Shelby and I are, if we could go back to school, which we'll never do because, you know, we don't like higher education that much because it's full of communists. But if we could, it would be theology and apologetics and hermeneutics and all that stuff. We love this kind of stuff. So give folks, just tell them about the book. Give them the Christian case for prepping.
Well, so the reason this came about, I actually wrote this to give away as a document kind of when people join PrepperNet. And he's a world famous, and he just passed away a few weeks ago. Not going to get upset, but he was a great mentor to me. One of the smartest biblical scholars of our day. I mean, he's like the C.S. Lewis. He passed away, a couple weeks ago. His name is Norman Geisler.
Did he really? I didn't realize he passed.
Okay, yes, he did. And okay, so for the last 20 years, he's kind of mentored me in my studying of end time prophecy. He's also, him and his editor helped me with the book to make sure that it was theologically correct, because who wants to put a book out there that is a lie? And I didn't want to do that. And so, but all my friends at my church always said, you know what, Forrest, that's great. That's awesome. You're doing that. But you know what? I'm going to just trust God. And it really bugged me. And so I started kind of looking in the Bible for, really, is that all we're supposed to do is trust God? And then, and I found stories that people that trusted God still weren't blessed because they didn't obey God. So I figured this thing out. It's like a light bulb went in my head, off in my head. You've got to trust God, but you got to be obedient to God as well. So now when people say, well, you know what, I'll just trust God, I'm like, great. You know, you can trust God and still be disobedience. And they look at me weird. They go, what do you mean by that? I said, well, you know, God told Noah, hey, there's a big flood coming. You need to build this boat and you need to put some provisions on there so you can survive. So Noah could have go, you know what, I trust you. That's going to happen. But Noah was obedient. And he actually did what God told him to do. And that goes throughout story after story. Joseph, God never told Joseph, you know, interpreted the dream of the king. And there was going to be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. And God never said, Joseph, think about it. You need to put food away. No, he never said any magical voice like that. Joseph used his own common sense going, okay, God tells me what's going to happen. I've got to do action on my part to make sure that, you know, I can, well, he was credit for saving the world, you know, the people at the time. So imagine if he didn't obey what he was hearing from the Lord. So we hear in the, we hear this, but also Noah, it says, because of his righteousness was because of, according to his faith, he actually acted on his faith by trusting God and doing what God asked him to do. And there's story after story after story in the Bible like that. You can trust God, but if you disobey him, you're still not in God's will in a sense. So it's trust and obey, trust and obey. And so,
Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry, no, go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you said.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I thought you were done. Something about Noah, too, that is not often talked about in the Christian prepping community is that Noah was scorned and ridiculed and mocked by everybody else, apparently, from my reading of it, pretty much on planet Earth. It was a much smaller population then. But he was made fun of, and everybody thought he was crazy. And having come from my previous situation, I can relate to that. In fact, I had a conversation with my pastor, and I said, this is really, really hard. I feel like Noah, like I'm supposed to be doing these things. God's called me to prepare, and the rest of the world is mocking me. I'm going to keep doing it, by the way. I'm going to keep prepping. But Noah was mocked and scorned. And so preppers out there, you were talking earlier, Forrest, about, you know, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. I've got some validation. I'm not crazy. Forget the scorn and the mocking from the rest of the world, preppers. Do what you got to do, because that is biblical. And that's how Noah did it. And be like Noah.
Right, and exactly. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, this one hits at home to everyone. And it says, but if anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So what that says there, if you just, I mean, it really says that if you don't provide for your family, it doesn't say in your if you provide from your family in the best of times. It says if you don't provide for your family, even when you're in a job loss, even when there's a medical problem within your household, if a man doesn't provide for his family, then he's worse than an unbeliever. That's the only time in the Bible it says you're worse than an unbeliever. And it says, and so that means that one, as I believe as preppers, one, we need to get out of debt as soon as we can. Two, we got to get out of debt. I mean, that's got to be a part of prepping. We also have to have provisions. I mean, we have house insurance, you know, car insurance. We need life insurance. I mean, a lot of people overlook, like, we need life insurance for our family as well, possibly. Also, you need food insurance. You need, what if the car breaks down? You need to live within your means so you can provide for your family. So if a natural disaster hits your family and you have a job loss, you can still survive through it and provide for your family. And so that's not even take it. I mean, that's just one aspect of, you know, trusting God, obeying his word. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so how, I'm wondering, because I love this. I'm just sitting here absorbing this for us. How has you wrote this book and has it came to be about and was published? How did your ridicule factor go? Did people who were before skeptical see it from a different angle, or was it received well, or did some of the ridicule continue? I know some of it probably did, but I want to hear kind of what your thoughts were on that and your experience.
Well, first of all my friends were amazed that I even wrote a book, because I didn't really tell people in my church I wrote a book. It's kind of leaked in kind of slowly. I know. I just didn't go in there and broadcast, but it's leaked out a little bit. But the ones that have read it go, you know what? I would say almost 100% of people go, you know, you're right. I need to do more things to protect my family or to prepare. But their preparedness is totally different than my preparedness, but at least it's getting them down the road of being prepared, having some cash and maybe some silver and some food, you know, like double your pantry. That's, to some people, that is preparedness. To myself, that's a first step, and they need to get past that, but they, you know, maybe time they will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I just didn't want to, you know, as a prophet's not welcome in his own home, so I didn't push it at my church. Not that I'm a prophet by any means. But also it talks about Noah, in the days of Noah, and it tells us what was going on in the days of Noah. I mean, people were, orgies, the people were getting drunk, no one was working. I mean, it was just, evil was running rampant. Some could argue that's what's going on today. But it also talks about in the future as well, about wars and rumors of wars. Nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom, famines and earthquakes. And it says that is the beginning of birth pains. So God warns us throughout the Bible that things are going to get worse and worse as we get closer to his end. To the end of his timeline for us. Things are going to get worse and worse for the believers. Absolutely. I mean, and we see that happening. Even everyone knows, even the non-believers have heard the thing of tribulation and Armageddon. So it's going to get worse. So God is telling us what is happening is going to happen. So at what point do you start preparing for that? Because if you don't prepare for it, you're in disobedience. So you have to prepare for that. Again, we're going to trust God through that. You know, God provided the Israelites manna from heaven. It fell from heaven 6 days a week. And he said on the 6 days, grab extra for the seventh day, because I'm not going to provide you food. And on the seventh day, the ones that didn't put back, they couldn't eat. They went hungry. And the manna that was on the ground is when they grabbed it, it turns to worms and decayed in their hands. And so that's kind of a little prepping story as well, in the midst of the Israelites trusting God, but yet there was a part that they had to do their own part to get food ready on the seventh day. And so we know, the Bible tells us, all the bad things are going to happen. The Christians are going to be martyred, you know, earthquakes, natural disasters. And if you study end times, you know there's some big wars coming up. There's a war coming that a third of the population on earth is going to pass away. Mm-hmm. And a third of the earth is going to be burnt. Now, I've studied the end times for a long time. I don't think that's going to be America, but it's going to get bad for us. And so as a believer, at the end, as we're going through this, I want to be strong in my faith and my family, protected, so I can still share the gospel and help people out. I don't want to be one of these in line at a FEMA camp looking for help and not being able to be strong for Christ and my faith and my family in jeopardy. I don't want that. I buy health insurance and life insurance so I can protect my family. So the Bible points to everything, just sum it up, is it's going to get bad, and you've got to be ready. And to be ready, you've got to obey God, because he tells us what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Wow, so much to unpack there. Here are a couple things that I took out of this, and Forrest, love to get your thoughts on that. I'll take these in order. So one of them is, you said a man needs to provide for his family. Could not agree more. And obviously, if you're injured or something like that, there are ways. I mean, you should arrange for charity and do all that other stuff. This isn't one of those things where, you know, we're not cold-hearted or anything like that. But when you talk about a man needs to provide, that grates on the ears of modern society and feminists in particular. That's the worst thing you can say, and that's why I'm very glad to say it. And we're on some really good radio stations, and we got great podcast listeners who are not afraid of hearing words like that. But the fact that a man needs to provide goes against everything in modern society. And a great example of why a man needs to provide for his family is the Steve character in Shelby's books, because that character, Steve, did not provide. There were plenty of signs coming. His wife needed to provide, sort of despite him. And as you read Shelby's books, A Great State, you see how that plays out, and how if there would have been a man who was providing, it would have made everything better. They would have done much better, and things would have gone better. So what do you see? So that's the background to ask this question. What do you see the effects of feminism being in this whole thing? We've talked about, you know, Christians who are not exactly energetic and don't want to prepare and all that, and that's a separate thing. What about feminism? How does that enter into this whole equation?
That's a great question, and I know where you want me to go, Glenn, but I'm going to have to divert you just a little bit. I apologize.
Okay. That's okay. Right.
That's okay.
It all has to do, if someone loves and trusts the Lord and believes in Jesus Christ as their son, as their savior. Once people get to that, that changes everything when it comes to the relationships, the man and the woman relationship. And the thing is, everything that is not a part of goodness in God is evil. And so I know we're talking about, you know, women and the feminism and all that. That is just stuff that is against God. It really is. It's not what God, how God meant it. And there's not one feminist out there that I don't think could be walking with a good relationship with the Lord, because she would be in disobedience with the Lord at all times. And that, and God himself says, hey, a house can divide it, can't stand. And so that is wrong. Biblically, God set everything up in a certain manner. And it's not that man is more important than woman. Absolutely not. That is not what God is saying. Matter of fact, God says for us, Jesus says, you need to love your wife like Christ loves the church. That's the ultimate love. You put her on a pedestal and you take care of her needs. And it's not that the man has this attitude, I am the boss, do what I say. No, the Bible also says that when a man and woman come together, they become one flesh. They're equals, but they have different responsibilities is the key. Man has a different responsibility to a woman, but they're equal in God's eyes. They're equal in the marriage, but the man has the responsibility to lead the marriage in every way, spiritually, to take care of the woman in every way. And so when you bring in feminists, to me, that's just stuff that's just the evil part of the world. It really is. That's stuff against God, against the Bible. They're doing everything they can to actually make what's in the Bible a mockery to the God. And God's going to get his final say. But, I mean, even like the flag that they used, the rainbow flag, that was a promise God gave us Christians. And now they've taken that and they've turned it, and they do that to everything. So it's just not the feminists. It's everyone that's not with God. You know what? And it's going to get worse, and we need to expect it's going to get worse. And you know what? This is very sadistic, I think. I'm sorry I said that. I mean, I'm saying this, but the worse it gets, the closer I am to living eternity with with my God, which actually kind of excites me. I don't want things to get worse, but I know that the worse it gets, the closer we're getting. So I don't know. Y'all can call me crazy.
No, what you're saying makes a ton of sense. And you're very right about feminism being one example of fallen, sinful, human, self-centered thoughts and treatment. And yeah, you're exactly right. No, you didn't disappoint me at all in that answer. Well, one of the other things we were talking about, Noah, and one of the other things you've alluded to is what I call the restoration. And that's, and Shelby and I talk about it a lot. In my book 9 is called The Restoration because basically patriots, preppers, and in this case, we're going to say Christians, because they're not all the same thing. There are patriots and preppers who are not Christians, and welcome and thanks for listening. You know what I mean? But we're talking about the Christian case here for prepping. But we have to survive as preppers, physically survive, in order to be around to do what? To restore this country. And look at Noah. He and the animals, his family, they had to make it through the flood in order to restore the earth, to make it better than it was. Still not paradise by any means, because that's God's province and not human beings. And so one of the things I tell Christians, and I think it resonates well, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, Forrest, is we have to physically survive and able to enable us to be the ones who either restore this parts of this country, the whole country as a whole won't get restored, but to restore the areas we're in, or at least be a big help in the restoration. Maybe I'm not taking credit for it all. You know what I mean? I'm not saying Christians right. only in, you know, this part of the country, you know, we're going to have a Christians only policy or anything like that, because we don't need to. I mean, right. we're going to do our thing, and we're the compassionate, open, diverse ones, unlike the stereotypes that are thrown against us. What do you think about the need to prep from a Christian's perspective so that we can be the ones left to make this place better?
Absolutely. So God always wants his church strong. He wants them to follow him and obey him. And for us to have any kind of impact, we have to make it through disasters, you know, crap hits the fan situations. Also, you know, one of the events, we have a natural disaster every year that affects 90% of the world every single year. It's a natural disaster. It happens every single year. And if we didn't have modern technology, 90% of the people would die. And it's called winter. And it is a natural disaster. If we didn't have heat or electricity, 90% of the people would die, or we would have to all move to the equator. I mean, it's just, that's the fact. And so God wants us, he gives us a brain. He wants us to make a difference. He wants us to build community up. He wants us to share the love that Christ showed us. And he also, he doesn't want it to be like Days of Noah, and he knows it's going to get that way. He doesn't cause it. And we have to stand strong in obedience and show others, you know, what Christ has done for us. But being a survivalist and making it through tough times, you know, that's also when I can make it through, let's say, an event, and my family's standing strong. Look at what I can then do for other people that didn't make it through or as strong. They have no food. They have no place to sleep. And if I took care of my family and we had provisions, then I can help other people. And that's just showing love and the respect that they'll give me, the love that I'm showing them. That's exactly what we're called to do. My pastor always says we need to be Jesus with skin on. So we need to just love on other people. But there's times that we have to shut our door and protect our family. And I think that's maybe in the, you know, the first few months of a major disaster, you protect your family, because that's our number one calling, is to protect our family. And then two, then we have the provisions, we have the ability to go out and make a better neighborhood, a better community, because we were smart enough to do the preparedness part.
Forrest, we have about a minute and a half until we go into the after show for Patreon supporters. So for those of you listening on most channels and the radio stations, got a little over a minute. Can you summarize, Forrest, why charity is a factor? Tell folks about Christians. We're charitable people. How does prepping relate to Christian charity?
Absolutely. So Christians, we're called to love everyone, no matter who they are, no matter if they're the person screaming in my face that I'm from Satan, all this. We're called to love them. And how we do that is not only maybe providing to some of their needs, but also just not reacting. We got to understand that these people, sometimes they don't know what they're talking about. They are really just following a script that maybe a dark spirit has put over them. You know, another thing I like to say is as well is, you know, you can prepare all your life. You can prepare to make it through hard times. But if you don't, I mean, it would be sad to go through this entire life and be prepared, but never be prepared for the most important event that's going to happen. And it will happen. And that's when it's time that God comes down and get his chosen people. That's the number one event we need to prepare for. And it would be sad for someone to have all these provisions, work their entire life to learn how to build a fire, do ham radio, all these other things. And yet the thing that they need to be prepared most for, they miss it.
And I'm going to have to stop you right there, Forrest, because that's a great thought. And we have to stop right there. And let me just leave everyone with our famous quote from Benjamin Franklin, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.